cliffcentral.com.
In the morning, when I wake, I need specific radio waves.
Yeah, what a weekend, huh? Yeah, if you're a fan of the Portuguese, Serena Williams, Andy Murray, who am I leaving out, Ben?
Lewis Hamilton,
you would have had a great weekend. Just, you'd have been artificially buoyed up on their successes, which is what fans all over the world long for in a sports team or a sports individual. That they will pick you up in their glorious moment and lift you as high as their trophies. And for some people, that ends up being the high for the weekend. For other people like me, we just don't invest too much in these things, so we never end up either elated or disappointed.
So what are the big pinnacles of weekends then for people like yourself?
Oh, I just kind of mosey on through my weekend. If I make it to the Sunday without feeling too terrible about myself, I've done well.
Well, I gotta say, we binge watched Game of Thrones over the weekend.
Oh, well done!
Because I thought, you know what, like, I've got to be less cynical about the show. Really,
I'm
get
so
into
happy,
it.
And
I watched it, and I've become more cynical about it.
Oh, come on!
Because no, but the thing is, it's like it really is a process, that show. It draws you in. It's a love hate relationship because it's so boring. But those last two episodes were some of the best TV ever.
Thank you. At least you admit the last two episodes were worthwhile.
Only because the other previous eight were so shite. That was the whole thing.
But
it teased you.
Ben, you can write.
Oh, thank you.
You're a good writer. You know that if you're writing, you need to go through ups and downs, and there need to be build-ups to certain things. Otherwise, they're not as monstrous as they ended up being.
I get that, and I appreciate the foreplay process in life, but it was boring.
That's exactly what it was, boring in places.
And like, I found myself like, okay, stay awake, push through. And then everything kind of came together quite nicely.
All right, well, which characters can we do without? And I know that for a lot of people, Game of Thrones is over, but Ben's just rediscovered the final season, so who could we do without?
No, that's just what I said. It was a very invigorating process of my weekend. We could probably do with more wolves. That's the first thing. They must come back from the dead. So many people come back from the dead.
Okay.
The wolves must come back.
Right.
Hodor should also come back and now learn another word. It's more about bringing people back, actually, surprisingly.
So you want more resurrection.
Yeah.
And less, less man without faces,
I just think
girl with no name shit.
Yeah, well, that was stupid. and those high sparrows people, I mean, but again, that's such a great analogy of where life is, because that's ISIS.
Yeah.
It's like, don't enjoy your life, don't do anything, you will die if you do stupid things, and don't be homosexual. So I learned a lot through Game of Thrones over the weekend, on top of all the sport.
Okay, well, yeah, it sounds exciting. It sounds like a good combination. Yeah. And yours, Mubs, how was your weekend?
It was very good. My mom is still in town, so a lot of, you know...
She's not cramping your style?
No, shame. She had to go and see a pulmonologist, who then referred her to a cardiologist.
Uh-oh.
Then she was admitted in hospital because they suspected they'd have to do heart surgery. But everything turned out fucking fine.
Nice.
So it was good.
Were you worried?
Oh, yeah. I was very miserable last week.
Damn, did this happen during the week?
Yeah.
And then she was given the A-OK?
Yeah, so she's good to go.
So what was, did they get to misread or?
No, I mean, they were running a bunch of tests just to make sure that she does or does not need surgery. So it all worked out fine.
Hey, that's all you need. You know, a friend of mine messaged me last night and he's like, oh, my dad passed away. I was like, oh God, yeah. Really? You know, the problem is also like, as you get older, you start realizing that your parents are mortal.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a horrible thing to come to the realization of. And I mean, any time anyone has to go through that, you know it's natural that you lose your parents. That's the natural way of things, right?
Yeah.
Or that you see them get old or whatever, but it doesn't make it nice. And it doesn't I just, ah, it's horrible. Horrible, horrible, horrible. But then we, I suppose we also got to, you know, someone said to me the other day, if you lived in South Africa, you'd probably have a shorter general lifespan than if you lived in America. And I disagreed with them. I said, that's absolutely not true. Look at what happened in Dallas. A bunch of policemen going about their business doing what policemen do, and there's some dude on a roof who took out, what, 12 of them? I can't remember how many. But these guys were out on patrol in Dallas. I mean, Liron Segev moved over to Dallas. He used to be here in Johannesburg. He thought, I'll give my kids a shot at the American dream. I mean, who would have thought in Dallas you would end up with something like that happening?
Yeah, this is exactly what we were talking about yesterday, saying it's amazing because just when you think the grass is greener on the other side, they deal with their own set of problems.
Everybody everywhere has got some shit to deal with, so don't ever feel like you're the only one. And I know that it's a horrible thing to compare yourself to the worst stuff because it feels like schadenfreude and it feels like you shouldn't be doing it. But honestly, there is always someone worse off than you, and you shouldn't really take pleasure in that, but it should give you some solace. You don't feel like, oh, I'm suffering and woe is me. Because we get into that. That happens with humans. And it happens to us when we compare ourselves with people who are happier or better off than us. And even if it's just because they have cool Instagrams. Because that's what we do these days. You know, social media, all it's done is it's added huge pressure, social pressure. Because you see all these people like going to tropical islands in the middle of July. And you think, how come I'm stuck at work while they're on a tropical island? This is
why?
Just not right.
Why?
Yeah, why me? But then you think about the people who don't have Instagram, and the reason they don't is because they don't have a smartphone and they don't have anything in their entire lives up to now that's worth a picture. And you think, wow, okay, I shouldn't complain. Things aren't that shitty. Plus, those people are on holiday now. They're going to have to get back to work. And when they do, it's going to be really cuck. And they're going to wish they were someone else. So we've lost the sense of kind of what is normal, and where perspective comes into it is where I think we've disconnected from life. And it's bound to happen that you don't take stock of that often enough. And I'm not saying that you have to be one of those positive people all the time who's beaming about how lucky they are, even if they, you know, are leading a pretty average existence. All I'm saying is that you cannot take seriously what you see online. And we are bombarded with it day in and day out. If you just own a phone, there's bound to be a series of stuff on social media, and because we're all connected on WhatsApp, you know, with your friends and family and people all over the world, there's going to be stuff that makes you feel better or worse that you wouldn't have had to deal with 5-6 years ago. You just wouldn't have had anything to do with it. It wouldn't have mattered to you because there wouldn't be evidence of it. You would have heard, oh, so-and-so went to Bali. But you wouldn't have to see their pictures. And you wouldn't have to worry about someone whose parents died because you'd only find out when you saw them. Or if they called you, and then you'd be able to hear in a tone of voice how horrible it was. It would be more human somehow, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You'd also have more to catch up about because you would know less.
Yeah, in some ways I love being connected like this to the world because it really does allow you to find out what's going on and to keep up with people, and you feel a little bit more involved in a lot of things. But at the same time, you lose something. There's something special that's gone. That feeling of actual human contact when you do see someone that you haven't seen for a long time and who you like to see. Anyway, enough philosophy for one morning. Oh, we're changing things up a little bit today. Starting at 6:15, we'll be doing news headlines until 6:30. 6:30 to 6:45, we'll be doing sport with Ben. Anthea will be in from 6:45 to 7:00.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to give you an action-packed, info-packed first hour of the show every morning.
And then at 7:00, we're going to go home.
No, because people need us to do. 7:00 is where we start the real stuff. That's where we get into some of the things that we want to talk about in the morning. You call in, we get the wheels turning. We start your day If you didn't just want info and you want some fun and some conversation and all the rest of it, then that's where we start at 7. But I thought we'd give this a try. We've already got sport and finance or the economy or the money markets. So I thought, well, we'll throw news in there as well so that it's not all over the place. It's a, you know, solid, like a pill that you take in the morning that gives you everything you need to know. So starting at 7:15, which is in about 30 seconds, we will begin with news and then we'll go into sport and into money. Everything you need in the first hour of the show in the mornings. What do you think, Mubs? Do you think it'll work?
Well, I mean, we won't know until we try.
We won't know until we try, so we're going to try.
It's just a subtler way of getting more Mubali in the morning.
You see.
That's pretty much it.
That's right. More Mubali in the morning. Who's ever complained about that? No man I know.
You know, the funny thing, my sister-in-law and I were telling my mom about these holidays that the Dutch people send their kids on to specifically get pregnant.
Yes.
And my mom looked at me and she said, I think I should send you there.
You should take her up on that.
No.
You should take her up on it and then take a lot of contraceptives so that she has to keep sending you on a holiday. God, imagine that. Your parents paying for you to go on holiday and get laid.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. Well, let's get straight into it. I don't know if we need theme music at this time in the morning because we'll still be doing, you know, some discussion. But just for consistency's sake, let's get into the usual theme music. It is time for Mubs to bring us the latest news, and that is 6:15 in the morning's thing from now on. So here it is.
La 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 la. La 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 la. La 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 la.
Give us an idea of what happened over the weekend that we need to know about.
Well, the latest talking point that has tongues wagging regarding the SABC and Claudio Motsoeneng is this decision that he apparently took where he overruled his staff to push through a 167 million rand contract with a production company that is responsible for the show Uzalo.
And who, pray tell, could be the person who the COO of the SABC is trying to arrange a nice tender, effectively, that's what it is for.
Well, I don't like to play guessing games, Gareth, but I will tell you that this particular production company is co-owned by the president's daughter.
Oh, how fantastically. What are the chances?
Gugu Zuma Ncube.
How did that happen?
Well, there was a review panel of 6 members who apparently got together to, you know, vote on whether the TV show Uzalo needs to get a second season because, you know, that's how it works. That's procedure. So these 6 members got together and their concerns was that there was no proper business plan. They questioned the writing of the show, its aesthetics and delivery. And among the 6 of them, they decided, not good enough for a season 2. Until the COO stepped in and said, actually, we're going on for season 2. And the budget was about 10 times that of a 13-part series. So they're going to get
so they're
a much
scraping
bigger
off
budget.
The cream, hey? Yeah.
Yeah. So when Motsoeneng heard about the decision that was taken by the 6 member panel, he stepped in and the 3-year contract was negotiated and signed off within a week. So there you go.
Well, you know what? This is what 90 and 80% local content really means, everybody. For those of you who thought that this was just for Don Laka to make money, and for those of you who thought this was really about local content and thought, oh good, the SABC are finally living up to their mandate of supporting local music, local television, local acting, local arts and culture. Well, no, it's really not. It's only about giving the president's daughter a nice big slice of the pie with extra cream and cherries on top. And it has nothing to do with the quality of the shows produced or giving jobs to local actors or any of the things you might have thought it was. I hate to be cynical here, but this is what's really going on. It's jobs for pals.
The SABC is also facing a cash crisis, apparently. They're
negotiating. But he was saying how well they were doing.
They're negotiating loans of about 1.5 billion rand as its reserves sink. So
not only do we have to pay our TV licenses, but we now have to fork out money, because this money is going to come from us, the taxpayers, in order to pay for Claudie's excesses. And of course, the SABC aren't making money because with their new policy, sponsors are dropping out left, right and center. So audiences, by the way, they're checking out too. But we'll only know that for a fact in the next month or two when the ratings come out. What a mess.
What a mess indeed. In less messy situations, the Hawks revealed that they arrested four people over the weekend for alleged terrorism-related activities in Johannesburg.
Really?
Yeah, two houses were raided over the weekend. It's understood that the suspects were planning to fly to Syria. According to the spokesperson for the Hawks, Hangwani Mulawuzi, he said, "We managed to get a search warrant, and during that operation, we confiscated computers and other things. We then took the decision to arrest them. Two will be appearing in the Kagiso Magistrates Court on charges of terrorism-related activities, as well as possession of firearms and bombs."
Wow, so these guys were like going to go and join ISIS or something?
It would seem that that is what the investigation is trying to imply, Gareth.
All right.
I don't know. It's a little unnerving. This terrorism thing gets closer and closer to home, you know?
I can't believe they had... In Joburg?
In Johannesburg.
Oh, wow. I don't know what it is. Like, you got to have a pretty horrible life to think that being with ISIS would be better. And most of the people that join ISIS and go over there and do this, they change their mind at some point when they realize what a shithole Syria is. But then it's too late. You can't, you know, there's no going back after you've been in ISIS. Very few people make it out on the other side.
It's not a great thing for the CV, really.
No. In other words, it's going to change your life horribly for the worse, not for the better. But I think people who make really dumb mistakes like that are best advised to make those mistakes in Syria so that they don't become problems for us here in South Africa. Good for you guys. I support you 100%. Keep on moving on. I mean, isn't that what we want? We want these people doing their thing in Syria. We don't want them doing it here in Johannesburg. So you knock yourselves out. The way I feel about this, good thing we arrested them here in Joburg, but we should have really let them go. Because now they'd be someone else's problem.
But what if they were planning to make those other people's problems our problems by doing dumb stuff here at home?
No, then we should definitely arrest them. And in fact, what we should do is we should have let's have a moratorium. So in other words, if you are a Syria ISIS type of person and you want to head off to the Middle East to make your difference and establish a caliphate, we should say to you, all right, cool. We will sponsor a one-way ticket for you, but you must give up your passport and you must give up your citizenship, and you are not allowed to make contact again. If you do, then all contact will be terminated from our side. So say goodbye to your family. Hop on the jet now. We'll give you the ticket. You'll land in, Damascus? And that's the last we'll see of you. Let's test how serious you are about this becoming a soldier of religion thing. And once you've done it, that's it. You're out. But we'll pay for everything. We'll pay for your flight over there. I mean, that would be a worthwhile investment. It would be like a filter for all the crazies. We'd get them out of here in one fell swoop. Wouldn't that be a good idea? I'd be willing to pay a little extra for that, just to get them out of the system on this side. And let's see how it goes from there on in. What else is in the news?
Well, I noticed that President Barack Obama is, you know, he's found himself stuck between a rock and a hard place, and he's kind of getting flack from whichever side.
This guy can't win. Shame.
He can't win, Gareth, because when he has previously spoken up, you know, about Black Lives Matters, he gets it from the Republicans and from people who think, all lives matter. Stop with that stuff. And then when he talks about how people can't go around just shooting up police officers, and he gets flack from the other side, you know, who's saying, but police in this country, you know, are specifically targeting black people. So it would seem that Obama can't win, regardless of what he says. But what will happen is that the president will speak at the memorial service for the Dallas five police officers who were killed last week. That will happen tomorrow. And he will be joined by former President George W. Bush.
Wow, what a combo.
Who would have thought?
That's really... Those two together.
The president will visit...
I wonder how much they've actually had to say to each other since Obama took over from him.
That's a good question.
It's a long time ago. You know, we think about George W. Bush, but it's 7.5 years ago that he was president of the United States. Can you believe how quickly time has moved?
I can't believe it. It's actually scary how quickly it moves.
I still remember George W. Bush as president. I get the shivers, but I remember it.
I remember him ducking when he had a shoe thrown at him. In which country was he? I can't remember if he was...
He was in Iraq, I'm sure. Yeah, that's a very big insult in the Middle East to throw a shoe at someone. Very big insult. That's you know you're a real badass when people throw shoes at you. But yeah, so the two of them are going to get together for these police officers' funerals.
Yes, Vice President Joe Biden will also attend the service.
Wow.
As will former First Lady Laura Bush.
Well, they're pulling out all the stops.
They really are.
You know, maybe we should get into this later, but this whole Dallas shooting has got me thinking. I don't know where I stand on the whole thing, because we've been talking nonstop about how American police have the worst reputation when it comes to young black men and just using an insane amount of force when there's very seldom a threat. And then I hear reports that actually, if you look at the statistical data, and I saw an interesting slide about this just 2 days ago. Someone emailed me a link to it. And it shows you that actually it's a bit of a misnomer that they're specifically targeting young black men. And that these guys who were targeted in this specific, the events leading up to this Dallas attack, but these two guys were not the most savory people in the world. I mean, there's a picture of the one dude with his two kids and he's got guns. And the two kids who are like 5 and 6 or whatever, holding the guns up, and he's like calling his daughter a hoe and stuff. And, you know, I don't know what to think here, because a part of me thinks there's something really egregiously, seriously wrong about the way law enforcement are killing people, killing them. There just isn't enough evidence to show that anyone deserved to die. And then there's a part of me that says that there's this huge problem in America with gangster culture, which is obviously a black male thing. And that we're crossing lines of racial discrimination, and we're crossing lines of kind of what gangster culture has done to black males in America, and whether or not the law enforcement machine is predisposed to be treating those people much worse than they do everyone else. Either way, we you know, it just shows you again. You think South Africa's tough, you think South Africa's, you know, a difficult place to live, and we're a bit of a screwed up society. And we do have the second largest prison population in the world after America. You know that.
Wow, I didn't. Yeah.
So between us, we've got a lot in common, and it's not all the good stuff. And I love America and I love South Africa. But I think we've got to look at ourselves in the mirror, both countries, and we've got to figure out a lot of stuff. I mean, it's such a mess. It really is. I don't know what the solution is. And if you have any ideas, I'd love to hear it. Whew. What a weekend in sports. I think we should move into sport. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I really was top to bottom here. So much on the go there.
All right, let's get into it with Ben. And Ben, of course, likes his 70s-styled music, so I'm going to give that to him, as is his wont. It's the least we could do, Ben. Your teams, were you supporting France yesterday? Or were you supporting,
I support no one, Gareth.
That's true, because if you support people, they fail.
I support no one.
They fall upside down. All right, well, let's get into it. Shall we start with Euro?
Let's start with Euro. And full credit to Portugal. Nobody gave them half a chance at any stage of this tournament. They still didn't win a single match in regulation time, right? 19 minutes passed, and every single one of their matches, Portugal had not won a match. They either took it to extra time or they had lost.
And they had to do without Ronaldo.
Yeah, Ronaldo got a bit of a bump on the knee. It was quite a harsh challenge. Harsh but fair from Payet. and his knee sort of buckled a bit, and then as much as he tried to run it off, you can't really. I know it sounds strange, you can run off an injury, but every now and again it does work. You see your rugby players doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't work, so after I think 24 minutes he was gone. But when it comes to the finals, something like I could even galvanize the side. And although France did have the lion's share of the possession and the opportunities, and they really did cock it up terribly when you think about it. They had 18 attempts on goal opposed to 9 for Portugal. Possession-wise, they had 53% opposed to 47%. Pass accuracy was 91%. So these guys really were doing the right stuff. But when they got to the goals, though, and then Griezmann missed a second-half penalty, which was just... it was just so open. It really was. It was just so easy for him. He should have done it not to be there. Anyway, so Eder, he scored. didn't score a header. Eder scored just a regulation goal of his foot.
Ow.
In the, like, the 100th minute or so. And that was it. Portugal won. Now, their coach, when they were doing so badly in the group stages, like, we will still make the final. Everyone's like, dude, shut up. You're clearly just smoking your socks here. But it did. Portugal got through. And slow and steady wins the race, Gareth. I think that's what we need to take out of this one. You don't have to be the fastest car to win it. Although you do, actually, because that's how racing works. In football, you don't have to be the fastest car to win it.
Well,
just keep trying.
You would have, if you were betting on the fastest car, you would have gone for Germany, right? And look what happened to them.
France was the flashiest. France had all the opportunities in the world. They had a great strike force, but it just didn't happen. And it's a bit of a shame, because France have had a bit of a torrid 12 months with ISIS being the dicks that they are. So it's unfortunate they couldn't win that one at home. But hey, well done, Portugal. Well, well done. Also, kind of well done to Banyana Banyana. Okay, they didn't win over the weekend, but they played the world champion Americans. Now, these American girls are hardcore when it comes to soccer.
Mm.
And they're the world champs. So Banyana Banyana went there as a warm-up to Rio, and they just won. Sorry, they lost 1-0. Not a big deal. Hope Solo, the American goalkeeper, real name, she said the South Africans were just so amazing. So good on them. Good on them. And hopefully they can then translate that into the Olympics.
Oh my God.
Because, Gareth, it is 25 days until the Olympics. 25. Shock horror. A golfer has committed, but properly committed to the games. Ricky Fowler, who is in the top 10 in the world, so he's a big name. He's all in. He can't wait to wear the red, white, and blue. And he's in. He's going to support the Olympics. He's going to play for America.
Good.
Dustin Johnson, though, he was peddling all kinds of shit about doing the same. He's out. He'd also given the Zika I want more kids card. So
that's a card now.
Oh, yes, it is. You just go to a press conference, you put it on the table and go, thanks.
What you talking about, Willis? Money. Of course it's a card. I mean, wouldn't you be worried for your health if you knew Zika virus was waiting for you on the horizon?
What stats did they provide us with last week that you have as much chance of contracting Zika as winning the lotto?
Yep. You got about a 1 in a million chance.
Okay.
Who listens to statistics?
No, it's bollocks. But another theory, last week gave you the theory about drug testing being a lot more stringent at the Olympics than just general PGA Tour. But I would love to know, and I'm not even going to claim this theory is my own because it's not, but what if there was a Zika outbreak in Augusta, Georgia?
Oh.
Do you reckon they would go, oh, you know, I want a family, I don't think I'll play for the Green Jacket
this year?
Oh, no,
they'd be there.
Bollocks. They would be there. They would have physicians. They would have whatever they want. These people are bajillionaires. They'll do whatever they want. And they're just such a thin excuse. But well done, Ricky Fowler. Patrick Reed as well. He might not make the American team, but he's still, you know, he's committed his way to it. So Ricky Fowler is just showing the way for the rest of the golfers here, which is kind of how he lives his life anyway. This dude, he's very good. He's very talented. He's very committed, but he also likes a party. And there he is, being committed to the Olympics. The Olympics, which is, of course, $1.6 million over budget. That is pretty much the conservative estimate that was bandied around last week. $1.6 billion for a country that is about 23 bajillion million in debt already. What's another 1.6 billion?
Are you exaggerating that?
Gareth, I'll have to double check my notes, but it's in the vicinity of that.
All right.
Another kind of Olympic story just to throw out there. I know you can't believe a single word that Sascox says, unfortunately, so you never know where to go with the story. But SA athletes are kind of paying their own way to the Olympics. Now, the lottery just gave Sascox...
Just hold on a second. Does this mean that if you're a South African Olympian, wannabe Olympian, you have to pay your own way, you have to pay your own accommodation, your own flights, everything else?
Accommodation
if you want to take part?
Is an accredited thing, which means you're in the village. But the day that you leave, the day you finish in the Olympics, you must be out. It's like if you're not gone by tomorrow, that you're done, because accreditation's finished like that.
But SASCOC, these members of this governing body of the sport, they get to stay... On the tab. and no one's chasing them out early, even though they're not competing.
Well, Gareth, they only get to go to half of the games. Times are tough. Only half of five-star hotels.
Sure.
So there was a local newspaper that did a report here in South Africa over the weekend, basically saying that one of the athletes who wants to remain anonymous said that basically you've got to pay your way there and then you can claim back from SASCOC. So if you go, average flight to Rio right now around the Olympic time will cost you around sort of 17 to 19 and a half thousand rand, right? SASCOC will only reimburse you 12,000 for travel. What a bunch of cocksuckers, huh? They've just been given millions and millions and millions. They had this great press conference where they're going, you know, this is all about giving our athletes a fair chance. Their coaches don't even get an allowance to go. So if you want to be the best, you can't go there with your coach. Every other international athlete's going to have their coach there. No, you might get a WhatsApp from him prior to the race or prior to your events. I mean, what are you going to do for with that? I mean, come on. Come on. 12,000 is what they reimburse you. And some athletes say they haven't been reimbursed for travel expenses and things since February. Mm. So exactly like, as you expect, SASCOC's account department's as slow as Tubby Reddy's metabolism. Oh, these pricks. They really did make the blood boil. And you just know that the moment one of them gets a medal, they'll be there. Gideon Sam and the rest of his cronies, they'll be there. Wide grins going, you see, this is why we invest in South African sports. You pieces of Super Rugby. Super Rugby, well, you know what? In 2012, there were 3.8 million more viewers in South Africa on TV, Gareth.
Really?
3.8 million is what Rapport has reported on.
Wow.
There's a massive downturn here. If you really break it down into the stadiums, Newlands has only got a 52% capacity on average. So that's 26,992 people go watch rugby at Newlands. That is SA's big stadium to watch the Stormers. Kings Park can only on average get 23,591. So that's 45% of their stadium. Loftus Versfeld, well, what a shame. What an absolute disgrace.
This used to be the place you could never get a ticket.
What an absolute disgrace. Loftus can only get 17,921 people on average. That is 35% of the stadium. Ellis Park, well, only 32% of that stadium is full on average for these matches, 19,808. Free State Stadium, a bitterly disappointing 17% of that stadium was full throughout the season, 7,780. And the Nelson Mandela Bay Stadium, the breadbasket of SA sport, they say, in the Eastern Cape. 6,914 is what you might scupper together there to watch a Kings match. It's only 15% of this beautiful World Cup stadium.
Oh.
So that all suggests that there's a whole bunch of shit, isn't it? This rugby is going down, down, down. To make it even worse, right? It's not just SA teams that aren't doing so well and people don't really want to watch. This past weekend, Gareth, the scoreboard for the Australian teams versus opposition. Australian teams, 66 points. Teams playing against Australia, 225. Log points for Australian teams this weekend, 0. Log points for opposition teams this weekend, 24. Oh, you know, you got to think, like, if you're in New Zealand, you wake up and go, why do we bother? We're so much better than these guys. We are so much better. It's almost like they need to have their own little Brexit to say, look, you guys, you basically are the Lithuania of rugby, you SA and Australia.
Yeah, we really have. You said it before, Ben. I quoted you to the New Zealand High Commissioner the other day. He said, I had to speak like him, otherwise he wouldn't understand. So yeah, I'm like, sure. You, listen up. We got a sports presenter. He says that your team is number 1, 2, and 3. And everybody else is 4, 5, 6 and all the rest, but nobody cares. Nobody gives a shit. And he said, you know, that's true.
Yeah,
he exactly. Loved it. And then he laughed.
And you can be nonchalant about it.
Gave me the middle finger.
Because I can throw these stats at you all day about who's just doing well, who's not doing so well. And it's not the Kiwis. They do bloody well. If you just look at the log before I get into the quick roundup of the results there. If you look at that log that they've got, and who's going to qualify. Okay, so there's your Australasian log. And I'm sorry I have to keep going back to this because I know you've forgotten.
No, go
so
on.
If you go into the log, the African Conference has three teams that go through, right? Lions, Stormers, and Sharks. Good on them. Lions, 52 points. Full credit for that. They go through. Top of the log. The Australasian group, right? You get 5 teams going through there. The Chiefs, 51 points. The Crusaders, 50 points. The Highlanders, 48 points. Hurricanes, 48 points. That's what it's going to look like. Mm-hmm. So you would think that's your top four, right?
Yeah.
No, the Brumbies on 39 points are in second. 39 points, and they get second place. They are 11 points behind the Crusaders, but they'll finish above them. So Friday, the Blues.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's the first Aussie dicking of the weekend. The Blues beating the Brumbies 40 points to 15. Then the Reds took 50 on the chin to the Chiefs, 55, the home team there. Lions 57-21 over the Kings. So the Lions had a very slow start there. Then the Crusaders, well, 85 to the Rebels, lowly 26. Like, what is the point of this tournament if you get a team, it's like grown men taking 85 points in the weekend? I mean, this is like what happens when you're a schoolboy team and three of you guys have mumps, another five have chicken pox, and another four are just not interested.
You are so strange.
Maybe. But 85-26, Mubs. You try telling me that's worth
mumps,
waking up
chicken
for.
Chicken pox and what else?
Just basic.
Rubella.
Waratahs, another Aussie team that took a thrashing. Hurricanes at home. Yeah. So this is the Waratahs losing at home. 28 to the Hurricanes, 17 to the Waratahs. The Force, well, they were useless in the rain against the Stormers, 22-3. The Bulls, they thrashed the Sun Wolves, 50 points to 3, but a little bit too late there for the Bulls. Mm-hmm. They needed these results earlier in the season. The Sharks, they beat the Cheetahs in a very Sharks. Boring match, 26-10.
Yes.
And then the Jaguars, their second last game hosting, they lost 8 points to 34 to the Highlanders. So that's pretty much where we are at Super Rugby right now. The Sharks, well, they're going to go through because they've only got the Sunwolves at home. So even if the Bulls do a big number on the Cheetahs over the weekend, that's not going to happen. So Lions top of the African group, Stormers will be second, and then the Sharks, and then the other teams I mentioned earlier. But we'll get into that later. Cricket, England are taking on Pakistan from this week on. We've got four scintillating test matches there. The first test will take place at Lord's this Thursday, 14th of July. The second test will take place at Old Trafford, 22nd of July. Third test at Edgbaston, 3rd August. And the fourth test at the Oval, 11th of August there. So it's going to be an enthralling test series, that, because Pakistan, say what you want about their players and which side of the law they'd like to be on, they are a strong team, and it's really going to test England, who have had a real doddle against Sri Lanka of late.
No.
But yes, tennis, okay. Andy Murray won, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's talk about that.
He beat Raonic 6-4, 7-6, 7-6. Now this Raonic, let's talk about him, because we know about Murray, right? He's good. Uh-huh. Yeah, he's good.
Uh-huh.
He's dreadfully boring, dreadfully dour kind of individual for the game. Nobody... dreadful.
Who, Andy Murray now?
Yeah.
Of
but
course.
This Raonic case.
Did you hear Andy Murray's victory speech?
No.
Now, this is the moment, the highlight. You've got the whole of Britain behind him, even though the Scots and the English have about as much in common at the moment as the French and the Germans. And you've got this guy up there, and he's won, and he's holding up the trophy, and his mother, that usually stony-faced old witch in the stands who looks like a piece of beaten leather.
Well, that's part of the reason how Andy wins, is his mother from the stands just pierces the soul of his opponents.
Yeah. Correct. And that nice, lovely-looking girlfriend of his, who seems to be taking a lot of strain because he's, you know, very tumultuous.
I think she's the wife now.
Well, why? It's the wife.
Yeah,
she's
right,
born
right.
a child.
Mrs.
Yeah.
Murray. Anyway, you got Andy. Everything in his life is going well. You'd think, but he looks so miserable, and his speech is,
well, so, you know, sort of did okay, and, you know, I'm having a good time, you know, I sort of won, yeah, and thanks to all the fans.
It is, it's just...
It's like the guy's just been given the death sentence.
It is. Well, I'm marrying your second Wimbledon.
Yeah, there's a woman interviewing him at the end. I heard her interviewing him. She was trying her best. She was like, Andy, it was so great. You really came from, you know, right from the start, you were looking strong. And no matter how well he tried, he just couldn't get close to you. Aren't you pleased? Here we are with your second Wimbledon championship. And he goes,
I suppose, you know, we were so happy.
What the fuck? People always say, well, don't judge them on the personality, judge them on the player that they are.
You've got a personality
good well,
like
but
that.
I mean, get a life, dude, really. Seriously, it's not just about you. Break a smile. I know your mother probably beat it out of you for all of your growing up years.
Right.
But still, like, looked like you enjoy the match. And you wonder why people give this guy so much shit. And I don't feel bad. You
know, he's a misery.
Like I said on Twitter yesterday, he sounded like those kids who get lost at sports days when they're looking for their mother. And they go, yo, I lost my mother by the cake stand of an hour ago. That's Andy's victory speech. Fuck, dude. Pull yourself toward yourself. Anyway, Raonic, right? This guy, he's going to be a massive talent. He's got a big booming serve. He just doesn't know quite how to use it. I mean, he was bolting down 140-mile-an-hour serves yesterday.
He's
just
tall.
Didn't have the placement, 6'5", yeah.
I saw a flash of him kind of training with John McEnroe.
Yeah, there's a real
and
talent.
And McEnroe's little compared to him.
Yeah, he's six. Well, Murray was little compared to him. 6'5". He's got a lot of talent. He's only about 25, 26.
Right.
This is a guy who definitely is going to be a big deal going forward. He beat Federer in the semifinals. If you can just refine his game slightly, you know, he's all the power. He's got all the enthusiasm and exuberance. And it seems he has, as he is a human being, unlike Murray. But if you can just get a bit of experience on that, and I think he lost to Murray in the Queen's final, and he now lost to him in the Wimbledon final. This dude's going to be a massive deal. But speaking of massive deals, there is none bigger than Serena Williams. 7-5, 6-3 over Kerber. 22 Grand Slam titles. She's now tied with Steffi Graf. And in my mind, that is the pinnacle, because Margaret Court is 24. But I mean, come on, when she was playing, that wasn't sport.
Yeah,
I mean, basically, it was Margaret, and then it was her best mates, and that was called Wimbledon for the year. They all had tea and crumpets afterwards, and that was it.
Margaret Court. Was she sitting in the box there watching as well? Because I saw one very silver-haired old lady, and I thought, sure, she must have won in the 1800s.
Margaret Court, I mean, the Dowager Countess of Grantham used to bet tuppence on her to win. You can't take her too seriously in her record. So, Margaret, I, with all respect, it's all about either Serena or Steffi Graf. These are your two titans of women's tennis throughout. I mean, she played in a corset.
No, let's be serious. I mean, even when Steffi was taking part, and she did very well, and I'm not going to take anything away from her, but really, on the level that Serena plays, you know, the kind of consistency that she shows, there just is not a better female tennis player. Can I just point out, there were a lot of lesbians at the tennis yesterday. Ellen and Portia came through especially.
Oh, yes.
I saw Billie Jean.
No. Yes.
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 Yes, she was in not the one from the Michael Jackson song, mind you.
No. That
Billie Jean King.
Yes,
she was
right.
Sitting up there. She was looking very interested in the tennis match.
Didn't Billie Jean King beat a man when she challenged to take on a man and beat him, and then the world said, ha ha, that will never happen, and then she did.
And she did. She's a hero. But I do have to say, a lot of lesbians. In fact, I always used to
Martina
think...
Martina Navratilova, she must have been
Martina
there.
Martina was there? No, there was a lot. I mean, there was even... I saw Beyonce was there. Now, she's not a lesbian, but I saw she and Jay-Z were in the stands.
Well,
did you see them?
You know, it's quite the in thing to be seen on center court.
Hell yeah, but they were in the box with Oracine.
Oh, yeah. Well, of course.
You also just want to be seen with Serena. I mean, she's such a superstar, this woman.
It's true.
Beyonce and Serena have now become, you know, BFFs for the public. Like, Beyonce even features Serena in one of her music videos.
Well, good.
So, I
do think that that's good for both of them. I mean, Beyonce can do with some of the shine off Serena at the moment, and you know, while it's not tennis season, then Serena can do with the shine off Bay. Either way, both of them win. This is good.
22 Grand Slams. Just put that in perspective. Look at the people who've done great in men's tennis, golf, whatever you want. 22 Grand Slam titles. That is why she's one of the greatest athletes of all time. Running out of time, though, Chris Froome has announced himself at the Tour de France as they go into the mountains, and he smacked a spectator. It was brilliant. It really was. You get those horrible gits that run next to you going, come on, and he punched the guy in the face. It was brilliant. And then in the Grand Prix, also very interesting, there was so much rain that they went, in the space of 30 minutes, they went from wet weather tires to the intermediates to the slicks. So there was all kinds of things happening in the pits. Hamilton wasn't bothered by any of this. He led from start to finish. So that is now his fourth British Grand Prix title and fourth this season. And then Rosberg, well, he was outdriven by Max Verstappen, but he had a better car, so he finished second. But because he had a gearbox advice session over the team radio, he was deducted 10 seconds, so he finished third. And Verstappen gets second, and that means that Hamilton is now only 1 point behind Rosberg in the driver standings overall. That's it for your sport. The Bounce Show today, 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. SA time. Basically a massive in-depth roundup of all of this and more.
All right, we'll get to Anthea in a second. Just a couple of messages here from Quentin. First of all, France really proteaed that final at Euro last night.
Spot on.
And Avelino says, thanks, Ben, you did it again. You predicted that France would easily beat Portugal. The jinx continues. Viva
Sadly
Portugal,
so.
Champions
Sadly
of so. Europe. Woohoo! He says with a Portuguese flag attached. So lots of Portuguese South Africans this morning. Very, very excited about that result. But right now, it's time to check in on your money. Yeah. That's exactly right. Here's Anthea Gardner. Good morning, Anthea.
Good morning, Gareth.
How are you this morning?
I'm good, thanks. The markets are settling down, it seems. You know, they're not as volatile as they were 2 weeks ago, so I'm feeling much better about it.
Oh,
and life's okay.
But I did look on Friday at what my portfolio looks like, and it's just, I think, altogether, it's about 15% down on where it was before Brexit.
Sure.
And that irritates me. You know, just a little bit.
I get it. We all felt a bit poorer last week, for sure. I did as well. I was watching my portfolio going, oh no, this is not good.
Now, do you think that we should not make any sudden moves? Because there are certain shares that we're just worried are not going to come back in any real hurry. But to make a bad move now, in other words, to sell while you're down, okay, would be probably the wrong advice.
Yes, definitely the wrong advice. So I'm inclined to sit these volatile periods out. And I'll tell you what's, and I say the market's settling down, but there's a couple of things we've got going at the moment. So the first is this week, the Bank of England meets on Thursday. And it looks like they're going to cut interest rates from 0.5%, from 0.5% to 0.25%.
How would that make a difference?
It's a huge difference. It's like your bond in the UK will now be half. Your interest rate payments will now be half of what they've been in the last year. That's a big thing. So I know 25 basis points or 0.25% doesn't sound like much, but it's huge.
All right. Well, sure, if you're English, but how do you think that'll affect the stock market?
So this is all basically cash. Yeah, that's the first thing. And this is all quantitative easing. This is all keeping interest rates lower. This is helping the economy because people now have cash to spend. You were asking last week that if you had spare cash, would you buy London property? Well, so now all of a sudden the pound is, what, 12, 13% weaker and your interest rates are lower. Of course you want to be buying property in London. That'll increase demand and that'll push prices up again.
Okay. I see what you mean.
So just on this property thing, actually, last week there were 7 property funds that gated. And what this means is that the fund managers have stopped redemptions. And the last time we saw this was 2009.
What is a redemption?
So if you're an investor in a fund and you decide to withdraw your money, that's a redemption.
Okay.
So now what the fund managers have said is, well, actually, you're in property funds and these REITs, these retail, I forget what it stands for, these kind of retail property funds, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're listed on the exchange, on the stock exchange, and they offer you liquidity, but their underlying investments are properties. So we all know property is a long-term investment. It's not very liquid. If I was managing your money and I was invested in the property and you said I needed R1 million in cash, I can't go and sell a property and give you R1 million in cash.
Right.
But because of Brexit and because of the concern, investors have started withdrawing their money and there's just not enough cash in these funds to give investors. So one of them, for example, Henderson Global, they own the big Coutts Bank building in the Strand. They stopped it because they got a fund that's about £3-4 billion, but they're seeing withdrawals and they can't go and sell these big buildings, suddenly liquidate their assets and give you the cash when you're withdrawing the money.
All right, let me understand. You're a property fund?
Yeah.
You're listed.
That's right.
People don't like the way that Brexit has affected all kinds of shares, so they're withdrawing. They're actually selling their shares.
That's right.
And these property funds are now saying you can't do that anymore.
Exactly.
Oh, thanks. So... too little, too late.
The last time we saw this was in 2009 with hedge funds.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very... So you asked exactly the right question. You said, well, should I not make any sudden moves? Should I not be selling? No, because you're selling at the bottom and that's the last thing you want to do. Yeah.
So in other words, hold on.
Yes.
It's going to get better quickly.
Well, I don't know about quickly, but it is going to get better. It's going to get better. Let's go with that for now, right?
All right.
And we'll see this with small caps as well. When the market is volatile, the small caps fall more because there's less liquidity. And it's like a capitulation thing, you know? So you're saying, oh, okay, well, my stock's fallen 20%. Can I have some cash, please? And then the fund manager says, okay, I'll sell it. Pushes it down even further. And it just is capitulation. So just like, okay, everybody in. Calm down, really.
Hang in
just
there.
Calm
it's going to be,
down.
Everything will be okay.
Yeah. And I mean, a good sign of that actually was on Friday, the U.S. non-farm payrolls came out. Mm-hmm. 280,000 new jobs were created when we were only expecting 175,000 for last month. So now there's an issue, right? Because we know that the U.S. were, before Brexit, talking about raising interest rates. Except now the economy is growing, they're creating new jobs, and now what must they do? So I think the U.S. Fed meets next week. So the Bank of England this week, U.S. Fed next week. And when Brexit happened, there was obviously talk that the U.S. Fed would keep rates stable. Then they started talking about maybe the U.S. Fed cutting interest rates. I'll tell you what, after Friday's number, the U.S. Fed are not going to cut interest rates for sure. But it does leave them in a bit of a quandary because they want higher interest rates. They want I don't know if they necessarily want a stronger dollar, but it will get them a stronger dollar. So the world's all a bit disparate at the moment. I mean, so we've got...
It'd be a hell of a thing. I was just thinking now about that Bank of England decision to probably cut by a quarter of a percent. Mm-hmm. And that means that interest rates are only a quarter of a percent.
Yeah.
Imagine living in a country like that.
Your bond costs you nothing.
Exactly. Your bond is basically whatever you're paying back every month without interest.
Exactly.
Wouldn't that be something? Huh, yeah. Mubs?
What are we paying now? What's our interest rate? Bank 10?
Between 7 and 10, I think.
Yeah.
Depending on what kind of pegging you had. At what time? Because, yeah. You know, sometimes they let you peg the interest rate. Sometimes it's liquid. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's a lot more than half a percent.
It would be great, wouldn't it?
Oh, it would. It would definitely help some people feel a little less stressed.
Yeah, and you'd go out and spend. And when consumers are spending, the market grows. Companies are growing because they're able to sell the products. It's fantastic, great thing.
All right.
We've got MPC on the 21st. There's no doubt there's nothing they can do. They can't raise interest. Well, they can if they want to. But
it would be bad.
It would be very bad after the IMF downgraded our GDP growth number. So,
okay, what else do we need to know?
Okay, it's all about banks today, actually. Italian banks. So Italian banks are back in the spotlight. I mentioned it briefly last week. Because they're failing their stress tests. But the problem now is that the ECB are turning around to the Italian government and saying, well, hang on, you can't use public money to bail out these banks. And in fact, the oldest surviving bank in the world is a bank called, and I have to get, my Italian accent's terrible, but Banca Monte di Paschi di Siena, the oldest bank in the world.
Was that established by the Medicis?
I don't know, in 1400s, probably. No,
probably.
Yeah.
They were the bankers of the time. Lorenzo de' Medici.
And they now have a bad loans book of 47 billion euros, which is about, I think it's about a third of their total
That's
loan book.
Quite a lot of people since 1400 that haven't paid you back. Huh? How's that? Now, is that worth something?
What, the bank?
No, if you have a book of debt like that.
So what are you saying? That they could sell it off to somebody and they could collect, 50 cents on the euro or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so. But who's going to do that?
Well, you'd need someone who's got extraordinary amounts of money, for starters.
Sure. And I think, so Italian bank shares have actually halved already this year. So there's a big, big issue. And my concern with this is that this is where the GFC started. It started with financial institutions. It started with banks. It started with banks being underfunded, not meeting their stress tests. And so it goes.
And as we learned from that movie, The Big Short, they have not changed anything about the way they behave. There's not been any punishment for the people who brought about that global financial crisis. It seems that we're back to the same business we were at the time. There are no new laws put in place. Mm-hmm. No lessons have been learned. In other words, we're courting with disaster again.
I think we are. And the ECB is getting tough now. So well done for the Brits for voting out, because the ECB is saying, well, you just cannot carry on like this anymore. And no, you cannot use public money to bail out these bankers anymore.
Yeah, it's the same way as the SABC shouldn't be able to use public money to bail themselves out because they're running the business badly. Mm-hmm. Or Eskom or anyone else for that matter.
Yeah.
You don't put good money after bad. That's usually the rule, right?
Yeah, but then, you know, what happens if this Banco Monte does go under and they owe all the other banks money, all the other banks start getting under pressure? I mean, we saw a little bounce on Friday. Banco Popolare was up 17%.
Why should a bank be treated differently to a person who doesn't know how to manage their money? I mean, surely if you're a bad bank and you don't know how to manage your balance sheet, you shouldn't be given special treatment by a government.
Well, it's because they hold your money. They hold public money. And no. If the bank goes under, what the government doesn't want is for the people who do have deposits there to suddenly lose their money. It really brings into question the whole banking financial system, doesn't it? Which is why I'm guessing Bitcoin, everyone's so excited about Bitcoin. But that in itself has its own issues.
I mean, sure.
That's a whole nother story.
Yeah, no, we can go into that one day. Mm-hmm. I think we should get like a specialist in here. I know a guy who can come and explain it to us.
Good. Because I was looking at buying some Bitcoins, but I couldn't decide. Just for fun, you know, first of all, test it.
Yeah, let me just tell you how much a Bitcoin is this morning, because they've gone up and down too. But it would be worth looking at when we occasionally look at currencies. It's a good thing to look at these. So first of all, for your info, the dollar is now 14 rand and 57 cents. The pound, 18.88. We've
wonderful.
Really broken that 18, 19
solid, eh?
Number. Euros are at 16.09 to the dollar, to the rand. And Bitcoin will cost you 9,594 rand and 78 cents.
So it's come
cents.
Off, right?
Yeah. It's also
because
gone
it was
down.
Above 10.
Yeah, definitely.
So is this the opportunity to buy?
Not convinced,
eh?
You tell me. I mean, if we look at it over a year, I don't think so.
I don't understand the fundamentals of Bitcoin. So that's what worries me. Like, it's like gold to me. Although, I tell you what, I was talking to someone else yesterday who's a gold trader, and she was saying that if you think Donald Trump is going to win the US elections, best you buy some gold.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is that what you would do?
Well, she has a point. If Donald Trump wins, then the world's in a terrible place.
Okay. Let's have a look.
But I wouldn't buy it now, because with all these central bank meetings coming up and they're all lowering or keeping their interest rates low, it's good for the economy.
Let's not make the same mistake we made with Brexit and go with the safe money, though. If you think if you are one of those people who's betting on Donald Trump, maybe you should listen to Anthea. We'll figure out what the right way to keep your money reasonably decent in terms of its value is by the time Trump does get elected, if it's the case that he gets elected.
We'll watch.
All right.
And then the South African Post Office has applied for a banking license. Now, this I find very interesting. I love this because, okay, so Mark Barnes has come in. He needs a plan. He needs to do something about it. And what he has said is, well, first of all, the central bank, so our South African Reserve Bank, has said that he's already passed the first step. It's about a year away. But what makes this interesting is that the South African Post Office has 2,500 outlets. So if you think of African Bank, so they understand that they need to bank the unbanked in the country, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're Capitec or African Bank, you go, right, now what I need to do is I need to build a branch, and then I need to build a branch here and keep going, and ATMs.
The post office has already got those branches.
They've got a footprint. To me, it's an absolute winner. And also, NetOne UEPS are the guys who do the social grants. So they're now distributing grants to 17 million people. They're having a bit of a fight with the Reserve Bank as well, because the Reserve Bank has said that the people they're giving grants to should be able to choose which bank they want to do it with. NetOne UEPS have chosen Grindrod Bank as their distributor. But actually, and of course there's all sorts of battles, court battles with NetOne UEPS, but if the post office could take over this distribution of grants with a 2,500 branch footprint, that's a no-brainer. That to me, that is an absolutely brilliant
I remember when you could open up a savings account with the post office. Do you remember that?
Yes.
And a lot of people did that.
They'll do it again. So what they're going to do is offer bank accounts or post bank accounts and cards. Which is going to be very exciting. I think it's going to be very exciting. So Mark Barnes was saying the other day that he has secured let me see if I remember this number. It's quite a big number, like a 4 billion rand loan from Standard Bank at 2.5%, which is very low. So he's done well to negotiate that. But can you imagine? So Postbank is going to have to be slightly separate from the post office. So it's SAPO, South African Post Office. They'll have Post Bank and they have to register it as a new company. They'll have to get a new board. And I think they're about a year away from getting the full license.
Which, well, that'll be one to watch.
Yeah, which, by the way, so is Discovery, right? Because don't forget, Discovery's also applied for a banking license. And I think they're just over a year away as well. So the banking industry in South Africa, I think, is going to get very exciting over the next year.
Okay, cool. Anything else?
Yeah, just one last thing. Pinterest. So this app, which, like, it's one of those annoying apps which just waste time, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And I'm not fond of those. But they have teamed up with Braintree, which is owned by PayPal, and they're going to start offering buyable pins. So this Pinterest app, what you do is you go and search for, I don't know, whatever.
It, like, could be anything.
Shoes.
Property.
Let's talk about shoes.
It could be hats. It could be computers. Whatever, then, you're interested in.
Right. And then if you're interested and you like it, you pin it.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's it, right? But now, what? So now what they're doing, though, is they're going to have a buy it button next to it. So instead of just pinning it, you can actually click on it, buy it, put in your credit card details, or use PayPal. And suddenly it becomes
competitive for Amazon and eBay.
Yep. Oh, that technology's been around for ages. They're only doing that now.
Well, Pinterest used to be really, it was just making a wish list of pretty things.
Yeah, it just seems strange to have monetized it earlier.
But
you're absolutely right.
But isn't the thing with Pinterest that almost anybody can upload something on it?
Yeah, it's like a Instagram of sorts.
So then where's the... So I think what they had to figure out was where the kind of commercial link comes in. So say you load a jacket that you like and I want to buy it. Kind of where does that transaction sit?
Yeah.
Are you selling it, or the shop where you saw it? Or
they would have to... Yeah, they're a central sort of hub of payment transactions.
So I think it's huge because the suppliers all have to be in on it, right?
Yeah, because up until now, certain websites and other brands do it themselves. But now they're already on Pinterest, so that's like a one-stop shop.
Mm-hmm.
Massive.
Yeah.
Okay, we have to keep an eye on that one too.
Yeah, and so the valuation, I mean, this suddenly, all of a sudden, this justifies the Pinterest valuation of $11 billion. So now that makes sense to me. So that's why it's all very exciting. Because I never did understand how they were going to be worth $11 billion before this.
Just explain to me what a T+3 settlement is.
Oh, yes. So today the JSE moves from trade, T is trade date, plus 3. So before, if you bought a share on the JSE, you only actually paid for it in 5 days' time. So the JSE has now shortened that period to 3 days. So if you're buying shares, make sure you've got cash in your account.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you bought it today, you'd have to pay for it on Thursday. So T is trade date. T+3 starting today.
All right. Good to know. There we go. Thank you, Anthea.
Pleasure.
Excellent. It is 6:07, cliffcentral.com. And I hope your Monday is starting perfectly.
Choice. Sometimes you have it and sometimes you don't. AutoTrader gives you the choice. Now you can shop, compare, and buy new cars. Watch our expert video reviews and research before you buy. AutoTrader New Car. The choice is yours. CliffCentral.com.